Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. There are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of American workers who are being paid the minimum wage. That's $7.25 nationally and $7.35 in the St. Louis area. While the perception may be that minimum and low-wage jobs are mostly held by teens, you may be surprised to learn that the vast majority, 75%, are adults over the age of 20. You've probably noted local news reports showing a number of protest strikes by local, mostly fast food employees, demanding that their wages be as much as doubled. Their slogan is, St. Louis can't survive on $7.35. We'll be talking about the pros and cons of an increased minimum wage a little bit later, but we'll begin with Martin Raffanon, Lutheran minister, activist, and the campaign director for St. Louis Can't Survive on $7.35. Also with us is Angela Harrison, a 33-year-old McDonald's employee. She is making $7.75 an hour. Angela, Martin, thanks very much for being with us. Nice to see you.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks, Don.
Martin, let me begin with you and just give me the overall objective of your movement.
What's happening with STL 735, Can't Survive on 735, is that workers from around St. Louis in the low-wage industries, especially in fast food, are asking for a compensation that will allow them to take care of the basic necessities of their lives, food, clothing, housing, and transportation. And they're also asking for a union. They want a contract so that they can have a voice in the workplace. These two things going together, increasing compensation and protection in the workplace, will allow these workers to move forward in their lives and to actually grow the St. Louis economy. Because we believe that when you pay these dollars, these additional dollars to these workers, they will spend them in our businesses and in our community.
But of course, the other side of that coin is the people who would be paying those wages are saying that they would have to let people go, that they would make less money, that, you know, it's a real negative for them.
Well, I'm not so sure that that's the case. I think that the research indicates that these organizations can afford to pay the additional dollars. These are very successful organizations and businesses. In the case of the fast food industry, we're talking about a $200 billion national industry, $1 billion in St. Louis. Their profits have increased dramatically since the recession in 2007. As a matter of fact, their profits are at the highest level ever. But they have not increased pay or compensation to workers. And that's what we're asking, and that's what these workers are asking. They are their courageous voice is out there saying we can't survive on $7.35 an hour. I mean, even at the highest level, that's $2.90 a week, basically, and who can survive on that?
You're asking for about double that, correct?
That's correct. But remember, the focus is that this amount of money that we're asking from a very successful industry goes along with the opportunity to form a union. Of course, we're also very interested in increasing the minimum wage, both in our communities, in our state, nationally. We're also interested in making sure that we can address basic needs like benefits. So Medicaid expansion and other kinds of things would be very important for these workers, and we're working on that as well.
Angela, let me turn to you. You're making just slightly above minimum wage, if I have my figures correct, at $7.75. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Tell me what life is like for you. Do you have children?
I have stepkids. I have six of them. And actually, I just get paid last week, and all my money is gone because I had them on the weekend. I had to feed those children. And that was just feeding them and transporting them around. You know, it's very difficult. Luckily, I have a friend, an older friend, who has a house, and she allows me to pay lower in rent. Without her, I can't get a place. I've found that apartments now, from the time I had one before, have gotten very expensive for just a one bedroom. Mm-hmm. And I can't afford that, let alone my credit. So, you know, that's besides the point. But, you know, it's hard just to get by with, you know, on $7.75 an hour for me means I have to budget my grocery shopping. I can't pay for anything extra I would like to get for myself, even basic necessity extras. A quality of product that I would prefer, I can't get. what else? You know, transportation, gas keeps going up, you know, so I have to limit my where I travel to.
Yours is a one-income family. Is that correct?
Well, me and my boyfriend try to combine our money together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we both work there. And so we try to combine our money together and try to resource everything together. But we try to set money aside, too, at the same time.
So the two of you are making about what it is hoped through, if this is a successful movement, the two of you are making what you would hope that an individual would make under a new setup.
Exactly.
What are your thoughts about what's going on?
Well, I'm very excited about it, actually, because when I was approached about it, I was like, this is something I've been feeling since I've been told I was going to make $7.25 an hour when I started. There was no negotiation in what my skills were and what I was going to get my starting pay at. That wasn't even in their vocabulary to ask me. So I'm very excited about this movement, and I hope to be a part of it for a long time until it happens, you know. The more people we reach and the more people we can get together and explain to about our campaign and everything, then I think it's going to happen.
Are you on any form of public assistance?
Not personally, but I do get assistance from my parents and that from time to time because I don't want to try to be on public assistance. I feel there are other people that need that more. However, I'm sure I would you know, get it if I applied for it.
Is that a typical circumstance, Martine?
Yes. Many folks in low-wage jobs make such a low wage that they have to depend on food stamps or other government programs to just survive, to get by every day, and to make ends meet, basically, just to meet the basic needs of their families. That's why the workers are requesting a wage that will take care of the basic necessities of their lives. I've come out of a, you know, homeless shelter situation, so I was able to see this on a day-to-day basis, and one of the reasons I've connected to this process, both as a minister and as a social service director, was that I got tired of seeing families, women especially, in a shelter doing everything possible to work full-time and to take care of their families, to do the right thing, to play by the rules, not being able to sustain a level that would keep them from becoming homeless. These are families that we need to support in our community. These are families we need to encourage. And with a better compensation, these families would be able to much better care for themselves, for our community, and we believe that it would improve St. Louis overall.
And I'd like to add also that these, for some people like myself, these are all the jobs we have. These are our livelihood. These aren't teenagers, like you pointed out in the beginning of the show, that are working here that just are trying to get their hair done or pay their phone bill. We are grown human beings that have rent and bills and, you know, kids and stuff like that that we're trying to provide for. And, you know, we need a sustainable living wage.
How many hours a week do you get, Angela?
I luckily get 40 hours a week, give or take. And that's only because I work the overnight shift, which I don't get paid a differential for.
Mm. Health benefits? Any benefits?
I do get some benefits. It's not the same as what the managers receive. It's a different type of benefit, and it's not very good. I pay a lot for it, and I don't receive very much for it.
Martine, how about this part of it, the benefits part of the package?
Well, in most cases, fast food workers, low-wage workers in our community really do. They have no paid sick leave, generally no benefits, and no control over hours. So if you're making $7.35 and don't have paid sick leave, benefits, or control over your hours, that is a very challenging situation.
This is where the union would come in if, in fact, this happens. What are the mechanics for making that happen?
Well, the first thing is that workers have to begin to stand up and have their voice heard. That is the first step. And that, thankfully, we have workers in St. Louis who have decided to take this step. Over 100 workers, and it's inspirational and very courageous on their parts to just say, enough is enough. We need to stand up, tell our story, and begin the process of asking for what we need. Now these workers have to make a decision about how they're going to move forward. They have to come together. They have to build their ranks. They have to grow. Forming a union is very challenging, in this day and age, as you know. I mean, there are attacks on workers and on unions throughout our states and in the and nationally. So that's why it's important for people like myself, community leaders, religious leaders, and other people to stand with workers. We feel that if we can create a national movement that has broad-based appeal and is consumer-oriented, we can strike hard, and these workers can achieve what they need to achieve.
Go ahead, Angela.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I feel it's our time. You know, first it was the factory workers, janitors, bus drivers. It's our time to form a union. You know, we're the majority in this country that have these jobs. And, you know, we support the economy with our money. So if you pay us more, we're going to be able to spend more in the community on houses, on clothing, on food, just simple necessity things. You know, it's our turn to form a union and get paid more.
I had seen a figure somewhere, and Martine, correct me if I'm wrong, that the fast food workers in this area put about $1 billion a year into the local economy. Is that correct?
Well, that's not it's not quite correct, Don. $1 billion, that's the size of the industry. In St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So about 300 million of that is actually labor cost in our community. So that becomes the amount that actually then goes back into our community.
What about the coordination of this effort? Obviously, a number of fast food enterprises have been targeted, if I may use that word, in your recent protests. But this is going on in several cities across the country. Are you and your organization working with others to make all this happen at the same time?
Well, in Missouri Jobs with Justice is the organization that is actually providing kind of the infrastructure for this work to move forward. And Missouri Jobs with Justice has been doing low-wage work for over a decade in our state. So this isn't anything new. It's just that the workers have at this time decided that this is the moment where they need to make a case.
And I'd like to say the strikes that they did in New York and Chicago are what inspired us to do it here in St. Louis. That's what we saw, and we decided, hey, yeah, you know, that's right. You know, let's go for it, you know, and it really inspired us to do it.
So it's a spontaneous combustion?
It's a spontaneous combustion, and it's also one in which finally workers are saying we need to say what we need to say and do what we need to do. And it's a community that is encouraging them to do that. So, yes, there needs to be an infrastructure. So Missouri Jobs with Justice, it's a coalition of over 100 faith, labor, community, and student organizations and thousands of activists. We want to stand with these workers because they are taking a stand.
We have to take a break. Let's do that now. You've just heard from Martine Ruffinon, campaign director for STL Can Survive on 735. Also with me is Angela Harrison. She is a McDonald's employee. She is making just above the minimum wage at $7.75 an hour. Back in just a moment to continue this conversation on the minimum wage. We'd love to bring you into it. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can also reach us on Facebook and reach us through Twitter. You can send us an email at STL talk, STL.org. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation. We're talking about the minimum wage and also about the protest demonstrations, the strikes, the one-day strikes that have taken place in the St. Louis area recently, as fast food workers primarily are protesting for higher workers, something well above the minimum wage. With me in studio is Martine Ruffinon, campaign director for STL Can Survive on 735, 735 being $7.35, which is what the minimum wage here is in this part of Missouri. Angela Harrison is a McDonald's employee. She is also with us in studio. You indicated, Martine, that you are hoping for some encouragement from the community with regard to this campaign. Have you gotten any so far? What have you been hearing?
Well, first of all, the community support for the campaign has been really remarkable. One of the things that we feel very strongly about is providing a level of protection for these workers, especially when they choose to go out on a legal 24-hour strike. We need to be able to walk them back to their jobs and let employers know that we're going to be watching their situation. We don't want to see any retaliation. So in St. Louis, we had over 100 clergy and community leaders who, on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, walked each of these workers back to their jobs and had a conversation with management when they returned them. Just simply this, this person's returning from a legal 24-hour strike. We are going to be watching them. We want to support and encourage their efforts to get a raise and to form a union. And we will be carefully watching their situation so that if any form of retaliation takes place, we will be able to respond as a community. And so that has taken place. No one has lost their job coming back. And it's a wonderful expression of the community around supporting these workers and their leadership.
I wonder, Angela, if you have any fears that some people might be fired if the minimum wage or if the wage that is a prevailing wage in the industry does go up as you hope, if that's not going to cost some jobs.
I don't believe so because, well, for one, none of us have been fired for going on strike. So why would they – and if you have such good workers, why would you fire them later on? You know, that doesn't make much sense. You might not hire as many workers because you're paying more, but you know, if you have definitely good workers that show up, do their job and stay their whole shift and see everything through, such as I do, then you're going to keep those employees on.
Is this a concern you might have, Martine, that this could happen?
I actually do not. These are jobs that they're consumer-oriented jobs. So obviously, in this case, you have a fast food industry that wants to see or have a good relationship, constructive relationship to consumers. Their frontline people need to be the people that make that a reality. And so if they have great people on the front lines, they're going to have consumers that are going to continue to use their product. What we need are consumers spending their dollars in these businesses. That's what's going to move our community forward.
What sort of feedback have you had from the industry?
Well, we haven't received any feedback essentially from the corporate aspects of the community, obviously, but we have received feedback from individual managers and others in local businesses. They have engaged us in conversation. They have in some cases engaged our workers in conversation. So this is a next step. That conversation and that dialogue needs to continue because the demand of the workers will move forward.
I have an email here I'd like to get you to respond to. There are a lot of people in this region that went to college to earn $15 or less an hour. Raising the minimum wage would not be fair to people who paid exorbitant amounts of money to build an education. Go ahead, Angela.
I'm sorry. There's a lot of people who go to college who don't make that, who come into fast food jobs because their profession isn't hiring. Those are some of the people that are asking for this raise. You know, not everyone that goes to college makes what they think they're going to make.
The challenging thing, Dawn, is that if research is correct, 48% of American jobs will be this type of job, $12 an hour, no benefits, by 2020. If 48% is this kind of job, then the point that Angela makes is critical. What are we going to do to improve these jobs so that they become good, middle-class jobs that can support families?
Let's take a couple of phone calls, given the time that we have left, and we'll start with Gina calling from St. Louis. Gina, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. I had two comments that I think people are probably thinking, or two questions that I'd like you to address. One is, I never expected minimum wage to support a family. I always thought it was the wage that was available for those that were the lesser trained, the least trained, and the least educated. And it wasn't meant to support a family. And the second is, you know, you choose to have seven children, it's expensive. In the process of making the choice to have children, you need to weigh it against the need to get adequate education and training to get a good job. So if you could address those two.
Well, I'd like to point out I didn't have those children. I helped support those children, but I didn't have those children. I can't answer that question. But I can say that not everyone can go to college. Not everyone can get the schooling. Some people have to drop out of high school early to support their families. You know, these are the jobs that are people are getting to live off of now. So that's what we need to support.
Any comment from you, Martin?
Yes. To the caller, we certainly want to see an increase in the minimum wage, which is different from what it is that these workers are asking for in relationship to the fast food industry, which is a $15 wage and a union. That's a demand that comes with a union contract. A minimum wage is a – of course, we would be very much in favor of increasing the minimum wage in our community. But what these workers are asking for is a wage that will meet the basic necessities of their lives within the context of a union contract.
I'm going to take one more call, and then we'll wrap up this segment. We'll take Linda calling from St. Louis. Linda, thanks for being with us.
Yes, thank you. I'm calling because I've discovered that the minimum wage in Australia, okay, they have a special wage for fast food workers, and you can Google this. My computer won't download that part. But the national minimum wage for adults is $15.96 an hour, okay? That's national minimum wage. If you are 16 years old, you get $7.55. Only somebody less than 16 would be getting the wage that we're talking about here. And it, the wage increases each year until you are 20. At 20, it's $15.59. They also have a schedule for people who are in apprenticeships that goes from $10 to $17.65 for 4 years of apprenticeship. Okay, and their unemployment rate is 5.5%. This has not caused everybody to go out of work. They have a good rate of employment, much better than ours, and yet they are paying people almost $16 an hour for their minimum wage.
Linda, thank you so much for the call. Fact of the matter is, Martine, is that we rank rather low on the scale in terms of minimum wage with the rest of the industrialized world.
Yes, this caller is actually making our case. Mm-hmm. And we believe that this is St. Louis. We're a generous, compassionate community. We believe in supporting families. We believe in compensating people fairly for their hard work. We value work. This is the type of family we want to support. And so when fast food workers ask for this increase to take care of what they need, it's an opportunity to build not just their lives, but the lives of our community. Because, again, we need small businesses, they need more sales. This is what they need. Because what's hurting small businesses is not labor costs, et cetera. It's the fact that people are not buying, and we need people who can buy.
And very quickly, the next step in this whole project?
The next step for workers is they need to continue to consolidate their power. They need to grow in their numbers and in their own strategy about how they want to move forward. It's a worker-led process where they need to begin to think carefully about how to move forward in their lives. And so the next steps for us are to just to stay connected to workers and see where they want to go.
I think persistence and strength in numbers is going to be the key.
Well, stay tuned. As we like to say in broadcasting, we will see. Thank you very much for being with us. Angela Harrison, thank you so much. Martine Rafanan, thank you. It's been a pleasure. We come back. We'll have a discussion about the pluses and minuses of the minimum wage with two experts on the subject. And I'll ask those folks who have called in with questions and comments to stay with us because we're continuing on this subject. And I think from what I can see that the questions and comments you have will be relevant to the next part of the conversation. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. Now to the pros and cons of increasing the minimum wage. Joining me in studio are Jack Strauss, professor of economics at St. Louis University, and Patrick Ishmael, policy analyst with the Show Me Institute. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us. Nice
thank
to
you.
See you
thank
both
you.
Again.
Yeah.
Jack, let me begin with you. Give me your case for increasing the minimum wage.
Well, I think the minimum wage probably should be increased and then indexed to inflation. So right now, during the 1960s, we increased the minimum wage, and then we just left it, and then inflation ate it away. So I would think a fair minimum wage where there'd be very little negative effects in terms of unemployment would probably be $9 to $10 an hour, similar to what President Obama is stating. Mm-hmm. Certainly, the prior guests were arguing for unions and up to $15 an hour. I would think that would cause probably a substantial increase in unemployment among unskilled workers at fast food chains.
Mm. The call we had at the very end, I don't know if you heard it, cited Australia and the fact that this did not happen there, where they have a much more generous, if that's the word, minimum wage.
I think that was a good point. And in Europe, in Ireland, in Netherlands, and Belgium, they do pay $13 an hour. So certainly the case could be made. I still think up to doubling the minimum wage would probably cause some unemployment increases. But certainly we would all benefit for a living wage. The community would benefit because these people now pay taxes. Right now, we have to probably give them – they have to apply for food assistance, food stamps, often if they work 40 hours a week. So we all gain by increasing the minimum wage, but I would think up to $15 an hour would be too extreme. I think, you know, college graduates would then work at fast food chains because a lot of them do not earn $15 an hour at this stage.
This doesn't only apply to fast food chains. There are plenty of other operations out there.
No, that's right. But we do have unemployment in this country at 7.5%. So, doubling the wage rate, increasing the cost for employers would certainly lead to some increases in unemployment.
Okay. Patrick, your thoughts?
Well, I share those concerns about the unemployment aspect. I think if you are going to push that rate that you're going to pay employees up, if the government's going to force a higher minimum wage, you're going to push some members of the workforce out of it. And I think doubling from $7.50 to $15, you would see at least two things happening. One, costs would rise for the products and services that those businesses create. And two, I think you'd probably see a lower hiring, probably higher employment, some combination of higher costs and worse employment prospects.
You know, one of the things that I see is this whole issue of public assistance. It seems to me that people making such a low wage are forced into the area that we've been talking about here, food stamps and perhaps other assistance as well. And this is kind of a cutting off your nose to spite your face situation, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's a multifaceted problem when you get into those lower tiers of pay. Yeah. And unfortunately, whether you're talking about the costs of healthcare requirements that are coming down the pipe too, I mean, a lot of low-wage workers are going to be hurt because their hours are going to be cut back to comply with the Affordable Care Act. I mean, there are a lot of aspects to if we want to make sure that people are employed and gainfully employed, we should be getting out of the way of a lot of the things that businesses are trying to do, which is make sure that they can earn a profit. I mean, the reason these businesses exist is to earn a profit. I think that raising the minimum wage artificially to a place where the market wouldn't pick it is problematic for not only employers but employees who want to get a good job. I mean, of those who receive a minimum wage, two-thirds are part-time employees. Only about an eighth of them are poor individuals from poor families. About 45% of the people who earn a minimum wage are either like teenagers or it's folks with a second job. And I think that if you want to target poverty and try to help poor people out, I don't know if a minimum wage is your best option.
What was your figure you just gave for the number of people who are teenagers in this area?
For those who earn a minimum wage, about 45% come from families that earn three times or more what the poverty level is, which means that they're basically middle class families. Mm-hmm. It isn't predominantly poor folk who have full-time jobs who are receiving this minimum wage.
They don't get poor until they go to work and start making $7.35
an hour. Well, a job I think is better than no job. I think we need to work on job creation.
What about the president's proposal for $9 an hour? Does that work?
I think it's problematic. Christine Romer, who was the chairwoman of his Board of Economic Advisors a couple years back, wrote a piece, and I believe even the New York Times, and said, you know, you may not see unemployment rise significantly if you do raise the minimum wage. What you might see is folks who weren't in the workforce before enter the workforce. So let's say a stay-at-home dad who isn't working may go out to try to get a job at $9 an hour, but not necessarily at $7.25 an hour, which means that if we're trying to target poor people we're introducing a whole another layer of uncertainty because new people will enter that market who may displace them from the jobs that they already have.
Jack? But new people entering the labor force is exactly why we want to raise the wage rate. We want to encourage people to work and not sit on the sidelines and be discouraged. One of the problems with Patrick's statistics is that a lot of those people he was mentioning earn at the minimum wage 45%, but a lot of people earn, as our prior guest at McDonald's, here earn 50 cents above the minimum wage. Clearly, I think we would all gain in terms of the community because these people would raise pay taxes and not get public assistance if we did raise it to $9 or $10 an hour. We would all gain because, as we said earlier, Henry Ford introduced the efficiency wage 1905, paying workers $5 an hour. And what he found out was there was less turnover. Workers were more motivated, and they were able to buy Ford cars. Right now, these workers at McDonald's are unable to afford their own food.
But Henry Ford was a member of the marketplace. I mean, if I understand what you're describing here, this is a free actor deciding what he's going to pay employees, and he benefits by paying them properly. Why wouldn't those mechanisms of paying someone more work today?
Well, very simple, because the community pays instead. There's a negative externality here in terms of we have to pay, when somebody works for McDonald's, we also, as a taxpayer, have to also give them extra wages or extra money in terms of food stamps, public assistance, negative income tax benefits. So McDonald's is not paying the full cost. We, as a taxpayer, have to subsidize McDonald's workers in terms of helping them get public assistance, and that's unfair to everyone.
It would seem to me that big business, which would be against increasing the minimum wage, uses this unemployment thing as something of a club, a scare tactic, if you will.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of big businesses that pay better than the minimum wage. I mean, I think Walmart, by and large, pays better than minimum wage. A lot of the folks who pay a minimum wage are small businesses who otherwise can't afford to operate. So I'm sure there are some businesses that would love to have the minimum wage raised because those businesses that already pay a minimum wage, their costs will rise.
But as I think, as Jack pointed out, that the young lady who was here a few moments ago made more than the minimum wage, mm-hmm. but it wasn't enough more to give her a standard of living that would work for most people, including the three of us at this table, I would assume. Right. We have an email from Andy in St. Louis here. Interesting, because he's listening to the right radio station. He said, I heard an NPR story about the current oil boom in North Dakota and about how it was creating a labor shortage in parts of the state. A consequence of this labor shortage was that wages for fast food restaurants rose to at least $12 an hour, and wages at the local Walmart store rose to $17 an hour. If these employers can do this when there's a labor shortage, why can't they pay these higher wages all over the country all of the time?
Well, this emailer actually got supply and demand mixed up. North Dakota has a very low unemployment rate because of the shale oil boom, and costs are high in North Dakota. So because of this boom, employers are forced to pay higher than minimum wages. There's not a boom in St. Louis City. If we did raise the wages to $12 or $15 an hour, I would think that a lot of people would be unemployed. And one of the former speakers on your radio said that fast food places are booming. Well, that's only partially true. Many fast food restaurants are franchised, owned by small business people. If the minimum wage was raised to, I think, more than $10 an hour, they probably would be hurt, and they would probably start laying off workers.
One other thing I think I'd add, too, is that given the nature of the economy right now and the fact that a lot of companies have already cut back, we need to be real concerned. I think it's the longer that we keep people out of the workforce, the more incentive it is for companies to simply take technological advantages, and it's very difficult to get them back in. I don't think it's necessarily wise to raise the costs of folks we want employed when there are technological aspects that may seem a little bit more feasible if we raise those labor costs.
Let's go to the phones. A number of callers have been waiting patiently to get into the conversation. We'll begin with Dennis calling from Overland. Go ahead, Dennis.
I heard one of your fellows there mention Walmart as a person that or a group that pays well. For about 30 years now, Walmart has been basically being bailed out on a daily basis, and the money that we are bailing them out with nationwide goes into making them super wealthy. If we want to talk about a decent wage, I would look at Costco where they have a different method that Wall Street frowns at, but the workers, you know, they're getting paid a decent wage. And and there's one other thing that I would like, the Show Me Institute, is that Rex Ziegfeld? Is he the sponsor of that?
We actually have hundreds of donors. Rex is one of them, but we have a number of other big donors.
Okay, well, it just seems to me that almost anything that goes on in the city and in the state around here seems to have the Wizard of Oz behind the scenes, and it seems to be going after workers rather than trying to help them, not just minimum wage workers, but workers in general. And personally, I would sure like to see Rex come out, and I would like to hear him explain what he wants. And maybe that would be great for a show.
Well, Rex has come out before, and I've talked with Rex on the radio before. So, I mean, Rex is a very nice guy, and he's no dark figure as you describe him.
I'm sure he is, but I don't see him as out there as much as you're describing. And I would love to hear what he has to say, more so rather than having various people say it.
Dennis, thank you, Dennis. Okay, but this is not about Rex Ziegfeld. It's about the minimum wage. And Patrick is right. Perhaps one of these days we'll get Rex in here. We've had him on before, and hopefully we can get him in again. But thank you so much for the call. Anything else that he said that touched on our subject?
Well, the caller did have a legitimate point, whereas there are different business models. Costco and versus Sam's versus Walmart does have a completely different business model, where Costco does start their workers out at $12 an hour but moves them fairly quickly up to $15 and to $17 an hour, whereas Walmart and Sam's are similar to McDonald's-like jobs, where they start their workers lower and increase them very gradually over time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that employees have a choice of whether they want to work for these companies, and consumers have a choice of whether they want to pay a company that has certain business practices they may disagree with.
We're talking about the minimum wage. My guests in studio for this segment are Jack Strauss, professor of economics at St. Louis University. Patrick Ishmael is policy analyst with the Show Me Institute. Back to the phones. Let's bring in Tom calling from South County. Go ahead, Tom.
Thank you, Don. Thank you. Yes, I think that if you asked a lot of business people and investors in these large companies who are willing to be frank, they would tell you that they're not in business to help poor people. They're in business to make a profit, to use the skills that they have to make their life better. And I wonder if it isn't time for, you know, this is kind of a policy and strategy question, for the people on the side of labor to start considering another model. And the model would be one where the unions and the community organizations help the workers to form their own businesses that are directly owned and managed by the workers rather than by someone who, you know, may not live in your community and may not care about your community. I mean, the big oil people have shown us that they're willing to spoil our oceans. The big bankers have been willing to spoil our economy. The big food people are willing to feed us nearly poisonous food. And I think that there must be room in the economy for another model where local people do things for each other rather than looking for what they can kind of suck out of the community. Is that part of the discussion?
Well, I think it ought to be. I don't disagree with that at all. My first job while I was in high school was for a company called Hy-Vee, and Hy-Vee is an employee-owned store. I think that there are lots and lots of great different structures of business that you can have, and people can choose who they want to do business with based off of, you know, what that company stands for. And so I agree. I think that if a group of people want to come together and do something better than what the big corporation is doing, I fully support that.
Well, I agree too. But unfortunately, American consumers and their kids like McDonald's and Burger King. So I think it's a great idea. But ultimately, it's up to the American consumer to buy what food they want.
What about this issue? It came up, Jack. I think you mentioned it a couple of moments ago. Indexing to inflation for the minimum wage. It seems to make sense in other countries of the world.
It makes sense. We index Social Security as well. I think the minimum wage should be, as President Obama said, should be increased to $9 or $10 an hour and then indexed after that every year to inflation. because that would make a more livable wage.
And Patrick, any problem with that?
I mean, I think whenever you're looking at raising the minimum wage, you do have to take into consideration whether you're going to be forcing employees out of a job and out of the job market. I do think that we need to be focusing on job creation, not necessarily on what the rates themselves are going to be, because we have a poverty problem in this country. And it's not just about minimum wage. It really doesn't have a whole lot to do with the minimum wage. It has to do with unemployment. And we need to be able to encourage job creators and not make life more expensive for the businesses that provide those jobs.
Well, Patrick does have a legitimate point. If we raise the minimum wage too much to $12 to $15 an hour, we would raise also probably the cost of McDonald's food, which a lot of lower class or lower middle class people do pay. So I think we're partially in agreement. We just disagree about how much the minimum wage should be increased to. I think 9 or 10 would be a more reasonable figure. Patrick probably disagrees with that.
I think that we should let the market, as best we can allow it, to dictate what the right price is for the labor that is going into the things that we buy.
Of course, the market today is dictated by the current economy, too, which mitigates against some of these things that we're talking about.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Let's take another call. Alex joins us from St. Louis after a long wait. Alex, thanks for being so patient.
Yes, I have a question and a comment. My first one is, if minimum wage increase, what's going to be the kids' motivation of going to college if they can make $15, $16, $17 an hour on a job? These kids in poverty most of the time is generational. I grew up in poverty, so I know it. And so if kids can look at their uncles, their aunts, their moms, their dads growing up, and it looks like they're doing well at making $15, $16 an hour, what's going to be their motivation to get higher education or go to trade or tech school?
I think our caller has a legitimate point. Raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour would clearly cause some poor choices. Many college graduates probably make $15 an hour. We need to have a large gap between high-skilled and low-skilled workers.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the motivation side of it, even the investment of college isn't necessarily as good an investment as it used to be. So, but setting that aside for a moment, I do think that we do have to get at the root causes of, you know, poverty. And a lot of that has to do with unemployment. A lot of it has to do with education. I mean, the minimum wage question is not a silver bullet by any stretch.
You know, $15 an hour is no panacea either. That's about $30,000 a year, which looks very, very good to, I'm sure, Angela, who was here a little while ago. But for someone who's graduated from college, that barely pays off their student loans, for crying out loud. All right.
Agreed.
Let's take a call from Ronald calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Ronald.
Yes, I think if they're going to look at this thing not in a vacuum, most of these people that's on these working these jobs are getting Section 8 housing, food stamps, and Medicare. So I would say if he wants to be fair about it, then tax the employer for that, because we're subsidizing a business so they can make a profit, versus we should ensure that these people can make a decent wage so they do not have to be in these inefficient government programs. I would like them to talk about that. Because they failed to mention that most of these people, even airline pilots that work for these commuter airlines, only make $18,000 a year, and they qualify for food stamps, and they have $100,000 in student loans.
Thanks for the call, Ronald. Who wants to pick up on that? Patrick?
Well, I agree. Government is generally inefficient, and it probably isn't the place where we should be putting a great deal of trust when it comes to these sorts of issues. And as far as, you know, subsidizing these businesses, you know, most of these programs aren't for the businesses, they're for the individuals, because we've made a decision that we think that, you know, we should be providing such services for those who are underserved. So I think you're kind of, you know, overlapping two issues and trying to force businesses to do something that you otherwise couldn't get them to do by saying that it's their fault that we're providing these services through the government, which is inefficient.
Actually, this is where I disagree with Patrick. I agree with the caller. The caller made a point which I kind of generally agree with. And while we have minimum wages to begin with, if we have too low minimum wages, which we currently have, the government has to pick up the tab in terms of, as the caller said, Section 8 housing, food stamps, etc. So we all benefit by raising the minimum wage to a more livable wage, so we don't have to provide extra government benefits to minimum wage workers at fast food chains. So in other words, right now we're picking, as the caller mentioned, we're picking up the tab for these minimum wage workers, the taxpayer is. Raising the wages would put more burden on the McDonald's type owners. I'm not for raising it to $15 an hour, but certainly raising it by 20% to $9 or $10 an hour would be a more equitable burden.
All right, let's go back to the phones, and this time it'll be Linda. Linda, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes. Well, it is interesting. I have not really listened to the entire program today. I have been in and out of my car, but from the employer's perspective, a finished cost of the 735 employee is really closer to $9 an hour. That's number one. And number two, a lot of fast food places, they're hiring young employees on their very first job. And what I have found out from my own personal experience has been that the very first job, we are doing the job that our schools failed to do. We are doing the job that the parents failed to do. We have a hard time recruiting and finding employees who have the basic just training, educational training to do the basic job in a fast food environment. And then they don't have the work ethic of showing up on time, pulling up their pants, turning their hats around, and go to work.
Linda, we've got your points. We have limited time. Let's get a response. By the way, the figure I used earlier was that 75% of the minimum wage workers are over the age of 20, so they're not all teenagers.
That's right.
Well, the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, they have a breakdown by age, and of those under 25. They constitute about a fifth of the workforce. They constitute about half of those who receive a minimum wage. So about half are 25 or younger.
Which makes the other half 25 or older.
That's correct.
That's right.
Go ahead.
And poorly paid. The caller
well,
does...
and it might be part-time work as well, though. I mean, majority of
them are
minimum
part-time.
Wage is part-time. That's right.
A lot of them are part-time because they don't want to give them benefits.
It's secondary employment. Well, yeah.
The caller does have a legitimate point. If we raise the minimum wage too much, by the way, the employer does have to pay extra costs in terms of Social Security. That's why she said the true cost is $9 an hour. If we raise it to 10 or, well, even more than that, obviously the cost would increase. But one point which she kind of missed is by raising – part of the reason why a lot of these workers don't pull up their pants, they are only paid $7 an hour. They have poor motivation. I mean, Henry Ford realized the way to reduce turnover and increase morale and increase hard work is by raising the wage rate to begin with.
Yeah. We only have a minute left. Very quickly, part of the operation that's going on here that we discussed earlier was the fact that they want to unionize. A quick take on that and putting 36,000 fast food workers into a union. Patrick?
I respect their right to freely do whatever they like to try to get the rates that they want for their pay. And employers are free to behave in kind. I think that, you know, if they don't think that what they're getting paid is right, they can do whatever they feel like they need to do within the bounds of the law, and employers are free to do the same.
I think I'm actually pro-union half the time. In this case, I'm not actually pro-union because they're asking for $15 an hour. I don't think that's pie in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, one of the obstacles they face is what is facing all unions today, and that is the number is shrinking. It is not increasing anywhere.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
They're going to put themselves out of work.
All righty. Well, I want to thank you both so much for being with
us. Thank you.
Jack Strauss is professor of economics at St. Louis University. Jack, thanks for being with us once again. Patrick Ishmael, the policy analyst with the Show Me Institute. Nice to talk to you again.
Of course.
And talk to Rex and tell him that we want to talk to him one of these days. A lot of people want to have a chat with him. I've talked with your PR people, and hopefully we can get him on this program. But thank you very much for being with us. I also want to thank Martine Raffanon, who was with us earlier in the program, the campaign director for St. Louis Can't Survive on 735. With him was Angela Harrison, a McDonald's employee making $7.75 an hour and apparently having a very difficult time living on that. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the challenges for both schools and families in educating students who have no permanent home. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at sdlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.